In Parashat Vayetchanan, Moshe continues his great speech, but instead of summarizing the history of the travails of Bnei Yisrael in the desert, he turns to perhaps the seminal event of that time in the desert, which is of course is Mount Har Sinai. Perek Daled is sort of an introduction to the explicit rendition of Mamad Har Sinai and of the Seth HaDibrot that we're going to see in the following parak. And I want to focus in on some of the themes that Moshe brings up in this chapter, and particularly on the theme, which is so strongly emphasized, of the prohibition of Avodah Zarah, and just think about that a little bit in the context of these psukim. So let's begin with the beginning of Perek Daled, where Moshe says, "V'ata Yisrael shma el hachukim el hamishpatim asher anochi melamed etchem lasot, leman tichyu uvatem v'yirishtem et ha'aretz asher alvan alechem, lohei avotichem noten lachem." Right now, Israel, listen to the laws and the statutes that I'm teaching you today. In order that you can live and take possession of the land that God is giving you. And of course, these laws and statutes are for your own good, right? I've taught you all these laws and statutes as God commanded me. And it goes on, "Ushmartem v'asitem ki hi chochmatchem uvinatchem v'enei ha'amim." You should keep them and practice them, because it is your wisdom and your discernment in the eyes of the nations. As I hear about all these laws, they say there it is certainly a great and intelligent people that follows these laws. And goes on, who is a great nation like us, who has God close to us? And then, of course, me going what is the great nation that has such just and good laws like this Torah that God, that Moshe is giving to them? And then, finally, we have a warning. Right, be very, very careful. Lest you forget the things that your eyes saw. Right? And they will remove from your heart the things that your eyes saw, will remove from your heart all the days of your life, and you need to pass them on, of course, to your children and to your grandchildren. And then, of course, he don't forget the things that your eyes saw, and he brings them to Har Sinai, and he describes to them how they stood at the base of the mountain, and there was, you know, darkness and cloud and fire, and God spoke to them from the fire. And he says like this, "V'idaber Adonai aleichem mitoch ha'esh, kol devarim atem shomeim, u'tmuna einechem ro'im, zulati kol." God spoke to you from the midst of the fire. You heard the sound of words, but you did not see any sort of picture except for the voice. Now, remember, a few verses beforehand, we emphasize, or Moshe emphasizes, don't forget the things that you saw. Here, Moshe is emphasizing something different. He wants something the opposite, that you didn't see anything. All you did was hear a voice. Now, hearing the voice of God is no small thing. I don't want to give the impression that I think it is, but the Torah goes on then to really emphasize this point. Right? Be very, very careful. You didn't see any picture, any image, when on the day that God spoke to you from the midst of the fire. Why? Lest you become corrupted. Of course, we know they are going to become corrupted. And you make for yourself some image of some symbol, the an image of a male or female, or tavnit called beimashia ba'aretz, or the shape of an animal, or the shape of a bird, going on, or of anything that crawls on the land. Then he continues, unless you look up into the heavens and you see the sun or the moon or the stars or any of the hosts of the heavens, and be led astray, then you should bow down to them. Asher chalak, Asher lokecha, that God has granted to all the other nations underneath the heavens. In other words, none of the heavenly bodies is worthy of your worship any more than various physical manifestations or expressions of divinity. They also are not worthy of your attention. The Torah here is very emphatic. Moshe here is very emphatic. And it seems to me that the foundation for the prohibition of Avodah Zarah, or at least the prohibition of worshipping idols, and we'll get back to that in a second because it's not exactly the same thing, comes from this idea that in Har Sinai there was no visual imagery. There was only verbal or oral imagery. There was only God speaking from the midst of the fire. There was no picture, there was no vision that they had. They could not see God at Har Sinai. Now, of course, there are psukim which ostensibly contradict this. Right? We need to talk about that a little bit too. In the end of Berak Chavdalad and Shemot, at least the 70 elders and Moshe and Aaron have this vision of Vayechazut Elohim, and which literally means that they saw God. And so the notion of a vision of God appearing in a sort of a way that he can be seen, isn't so foreign to the Torah. At least it's not foreign to the Torah in Sefer Shemot. Yet here, when Moshe recounts this, he's very insistent that there is nothing to be seen, there's only a voice. So what are we going to make of this? What is this idea that God is necessarily invisible, yet is can be heard? If our issue is with, as the Rambam tries to take this, right, our issue is with God being a physical body, having a material nature, which of course is very limiting to God. It means he lives inside the world rather than outside the world. Matter is a worldly phenomenon, if anything is. Then a voice is also worldly. A voice is also a physical event. For the sound of a voice is the sound of sound waves, which are created by, the way sound waves are created. It's a physical event, no less than something which is an image that can be seen. And many of the Rishonim, when they discuss this parasha, that's their concern. How is it that God speaks? If God is transcendent and God is outside the world and beyond the world, how is it possible for him to speak? And they have, all kinds of different technical solutions, but they amount to this idea that this is sort of a God created a voice without a body in order to speak to the people. That doesn't really help us. It doesn't really explain to us why is it so important that you couldn't see God. And yet, it's also equally important, perhaps even more important, that you heard God. And this, I think, is a central idea in Judaism. It's a central idea in which we ban all idols, all physical manifestations of God. Now, idol worship as a whole, as a phenomenon, has all kinds of elements in it, and we can't enter into a deeper discussion of that. I mean, there's the element of paganism, of many gods. There's the element of how pagan gods are subject to the world rather than masters of the world. There's the multiplicity of them. There's also the fact that they're worshipped through physical manifestations. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu, certainly not, is well aware that these physical expressions of pagan divinities, whether they be idols or sacred trees or whatever, they're meant to be symbols. They're meant to be representations or some way that God, the gods and the pagans connect to things. So, yet the Torah doesn't talk about that at all. The Torah talks about these as being the gods, right? You worship these idols, these images of an animal or of a bird or of anything under the heavens, or perhaps the images that you see of the sun and the moon and the stars, which is, of course, very commonplace pagan gods, the sun god, the moon god, which are obviously very important to people who live agricultural lives, but these things have a tremendous effect, a rain god, things like that. There's a basic pantheon which is structured around the needs of the basic pagan pantheon around the needs of people who live in agricultural societies, where they need enough sun, they need enough rain, they need they can mark the seasons and mark the months with the moon. There's a whole structure there which appears throughout the Middle East and well into Greece, of how, which is essentially based on how people live. But what is the Torah's objection? Why is it so terrible? Why is it the worst sin? And throughout the history of Am Yisrael and its land, in the time of until the end of Bayit Rishon, this temptation of worshiping idols is so prevalent. It's so powerful. And so why? Why is it so important that we not in any way make images of God, which is a Jewish value to this day? I think that the Torah here is at least giving us a hint as to why. When we talk about the power of sight versus the power of voice, right? We have no trouble imagining a disembodied voice, even though in principle it's a ridiculous idea, right? Voices need to be created by something. So nowadays we can create them artificially, right? It's easy enough. In fact, anyone here who's listening to this, essentially listening to an artificial voice, which has been recorded and is being played back. The playback is an artificial voice. You're not hearing the sound waves that I'm generating right now. You're hearing new sound waves that have been mapped onto sort of a digital file, and then the computer or whatever you're listening on regenerates according to the copy of the model of the voice that you have on file, regenerates new sound waves. So it's a disembodied voice, but nobody imagined that sound isn't a physical thing any more than things that we see. The difference, though, remains that we can do that with a voice in a way which is very different from imagery, from visual imagery. Think about the difference between a movie and a recording. But you can easily set up a situation where you have a recording playing in the other room, and you assume it's the person. Right? There's no way of knowing if the recording is high enough quality. The same is not true of a video, of a visual recording. Right? There's no way to be confused about the difference between a real person or a real event that you're watching live, so to speak, and a recording or an image of that event. But it doesn't matter how high the resolution is or how good the quality is, it's apparent immediately that it's a different thing, and that it's a reproduction rather than the real thing. Paganism, fundamentally, seeks to elide that distinction. In making a pesel, making an idol, you're not merely making a representation. You're trying to make a representation. Obviously, that's part of what the goal is. But a successful idol, an idol that is a holy object, kivyachol, is an idol which the god is imminent. The god is present there, right? We're eliding the difference between God as a reality which is transcendent of the world, and a god, and a pagan god, which is present in the world. Now, the Torah is is not a radically transcendent, doesn't present a radically transcendent theology. Right? The notion that God is radically separate from the world is going to have to wait for the Middle Ages and the Rambam to become a central Jewish idea. At the same time, the Torah is introducing to humanity the notion of transcendence, the notion that God is not a human creation, that God supersedes creation, he's beyond the world. And the notion of coming into contact with God, and God being something that you can address or talk to or receive commands from, the Torah is the first place where we see that that can be a problem. It's hard for us to see this now because we live with this notion of a God commanding God, sort of basically built into our DNA. But the notion of God commanding isn't the new idea of the Torah. The new idea of the Torah is that God commands from outside the world. Right? And that God is bigger, if you'll forgive me for the sort of primitive metaphor, God is bigger than the world. And images, the notion that we can create a picture of God is to create something which God is really there, or a true idol, not a successful idol, is truly there. And that is the opposite of what Moshe is trying to communicate. Moshe is trying to teach a first lesson in the conception of God as non-pagan, as being greater than everything that anyone can imagine. Now, despite this idea, we don't want to go take this all the way to a kind of God who's so distant that he's indifferent, which does appear later on in history, of sort of a super transcendent God who's basically uninterested, a billion God, who's uninterested in the world, right? So the Torah is essentially trying to create this new concept of God in which God is both transcendent in the sense that he's greater and bigger than the world. He's the creator God. He's the God who is lives outside, insofar as you think God lives, right? Who exists outside of the material world that we have experience of, yet at the same time has an impact on it. The way the Torah represents that idea is through this notion of God's voice. Right? God has a voice, but he doesn't have a body. And the Rambam, for example, who has a very firm in his notion of the transcendence of God, insists that Am Yisrael didn't hear anything, God didn't actually speak at Har Sinai. Because the experience of prophecy is something mystical, it's not a physical manifestation at all. Whether or not we want to accept the Rambam's reading of Mamad Har Sinai, the basic idea, I think, is an important one and a central one, and something which is emphasized in this chapter. And that's the idea that God is beyond the world, and all of the elements of the world, whether they be animals or birds, or the sun and the moon and the stars, are all subordinate to God and could never represent him. Because anything which is part of the world is by definition not divine. And this falls foul of the basic pagan notion, which is so attractive, I think, to people, that we can actually come into contact with God. God is manifest in a real, almost material way in his representations. And the Torah, all throughout the Bayit Rishon, we struggle against the idea because it's such an attractive idea. Because, of course, if God is there, you can manipulate him. You can get him to do what you want. And the Torah's message is not that we need to get God to do what we want, it's that we need to do what God wants. And that, of course, is how Moshe introduces us to the Ten Commandments, which are immediately following this chapter, where we're introduced to the idea of God telling us what to do and not us trying to get God to do things for us. Shabbat Shalom.